Between the 1860s and the early 1900s, banking and taxing mechanisms were changing through legislation. Cunning people closely associated with the powers in England had great influence on the legislation being passed in the United States. Of course, such legislation did not apply to the states or to the people in the states, but making the distinction was not deemed to be a necessary duty of the legislators. It was the responsibility of the people to understand their relationship to the United States and to the laws that were being passed by the legislature. This distinction between the United States and the states was taught in the homes and the schools and churches. The early Admiralty courts did not interpret legislation as broadly at that time because the people knew when the courts were overstepping their jurisdiction. The people were in control because they knew who they were and where they were standing in relation to the United States Corporation. In 1913, the United States added numerous private laws to its books that facilitated the increase of subjects, the newly so-called freed slaves from the Civil War, as property of the United States. The 14th Amendment provided for a new class of citizens, United States citizens that had not formerly been recognized. Until the 14th Amendment in 1868, there were no persons born or naturalized in the United States. They had all been born or naturalized in one of the several states. United States citizenship was a result of state citizenship. After the Civil War, a new class was recognized, and was the beginning of the democracy first positioned in the District of Columbia. The American people, in the republic to be found in the several states, could choose to benefit as one of these new United States citizens by choice. The new class of citizens was given the privilege to vote in the democracy in 1870 by the 15th Amendment. These new citizen subjects were required to apply for marriage, registered to vote, register births, deaths, etc. It all required was an application. Benefits came with this new citizenship, but with the benefits came duties and responsibilities and liabilities that were totally regulated by the legislature for the District of Columbia. Edward Mandel House is attributed with giving a very detailed outline of the plans to be implemented to enslave the American people. 1. The 13th Amendment in 1865 opened the way for the people to volunteer into slavery, to accept the benefits offered by the United States. Whether House actually spoke the words or not is really irrelevant because the scenario detailed in the statement attributed to him has clearly been implemented. Central banking for the United States was legislated with the Federal Reserve Act in 1913. The ability to decrease the currency in circulation through taxation was legislated with the 16th Amendment in 1913. Support for the presumption that the American people had volunteered to participate in the United States democracy was legislated with the 17th Amendment in 1913. The path was provided for the control of the courts by the British Crown with the creation of the American Bar Association in 1913. In 1917, the United States legislature passed the Trading with the Enemy Act and the Emergency War Powers Act, opening the doors for the United States to suspend limitations otherwise mandated in the Constitution. Even in times of peace, every contrived and created social, political, or financial emergency was sufficient authority for the officers of the United States to overstep its peacetime powers and implement volumes of law that would increase the coffers of the United States. There is always a declared emergency in the United States and its states, administrative units, but it only applies to their subjects. In the 1920s, the states accelerated the push for mothers to register their babies as first required upon the new federal property, the so-called freed black slaves. Life was good and people were not paying attention to what was happening in government. The stock market crashed, and those who were not on the inside were not warned to take their money out before they lost everything. The Great Diversion. In the 1930s, federal legislation provided for registration of babies through applications for birth certificates, so government workers could get maternity leave with pay. The states pushed for registration, surrender of ownership, of cars through applications for certificates of title, and for registration of land through registration of deeds of trust, which turned the land over to the state. Constructive trusts secretly were created as each of the people blindly walked into the United States democracy, thereby agreeing to be sureties for the debts of the United States. The Great Depression supplied the diversion to keep the people's attention off what government was doing. The Social Security program was implemented, along with numerous other United States programs that invited the American people to volunteer to be the sureties behind the United States' new registered property and adhesion contracts through the new United States subjects. The plan was well on its path by 1933. Massive registration, surrender, of property through United States agencies, including the state subdivisions, was assuring the United States and its officers would get rich beyond their wildest expectations. All of this was done without full disclosure of the material facts that accompanied each application for registration. Is that fraud? The fraud was a sufficient reason to charge all the United States officers with treason, unless a remedy could be supplied for the people to recoup their property and collect for the damages they suffered as a result of the fraud. Plausible deniability and your available remedies. If a remedy was available, and the people chose not to or failed to use the remedy, no charge of fraud could be sustained even in a common law court. The United States only needed to provide the remedy. It was not required to explain it or even tell the people where the remedy could be found. The attorneys did not even have to be taught about the remedy. That gave them plausible deniability when the people struggled to understand the new laws. The legislators did not have to have the intricate details of the law explained to them regarding the bills they were passing. That gave them plausible deniability. If the people failed to use their remedy, the United States came out the winner every time. If the people did discover their remedy, the United States had to honor it and release the registered property back to the people, but only if the people knew they had a remedy, and only if they requested it in the proper manner. It was a great plan. With plausible deniability, even when the people knew they had a remedy and pursued it, the attorneys, judges, and legislators could act like they did not understand the people's claims. Requiring the public schools to teach civics, government, and history classes out of approved politically correct textbooks also assured the people would not find the remedy for a very long time. Passing new state and federal laws that appeared to subject the people to rules and regulations added another level of protection against the people finding their remedy. The public socialist media was molded to report politically correct, though substantially incorrect news day after day, until few people would even think there could be a remedy available to them. The people could be separated from their money and their time to pursue the remedy long enough for the solutions to be lost in the millions of pages of the books in huge law libraries across the country. So many people knew there was something wrong with all the conflicts in the laws with the facts taught in the government schools. How can the American people be free and subject to a de facto government's whims at the same time? Who would ever have thought the people would be resourceful enough to actually find the remedy? But they did. The fraudulent insurance policy that changed everything. In 1933, the United States put its insurance policy into place with House Joint Resolution 192 and recorded it in the Congressional Record. It was not required to be promulgated in the Federal Register. An executive order issued on April 5, 1933, paving the way for the withdrawal of gold in the United States. Representative Lewis T. McFadden brought formal charges on May 23, 1933, against the Board of Governors of the Federal Reserve Bank System, the Comptroller of the Currency, and the Secretary of the United States Treasury, Congressional Record, May 23, 1933, page 4055-4058. H.J.R. 192 passed on June 3, 1933. Mr. McFadden claimed on June 10, 1933. Mr. Chairman, we have in this country one of the most corrupt institutions the world has ever known. I refer to the Federal Reserve Board and the Federal Reserve Banks. H.J.R. 192 is the insurance policy that protects the legislators from conviction for fraud and treason against the American people. It also protects the American people from damages caused by the actions of the United States. For speaking like he did, Mr. McFadden was poisoned by the powers that be by agents of that federal corporation.